Hello, citizens. Welcome to our show, a place of pure opinion and sometimes fact. We have fabulous interviewers today. Amy Chen, Amy Farrell, Pierce Meyer, and Stephen White, each with a different topic. The first interview is hosted by Amy Chen with the topic of crossing the boundary of language.
You did get America.
I said, Chico, so I could get in me. I said, Chico, in me was here. One more in room. So in my Kuma, I walk each one of Joker, ten in the Jansi. I got each one of Joker, Joker, anyhow. Your home, son, you see.
Knowing that my mom came to the United States at the age of 17 by taking a plane here, I didn't know that she struggled so much. She says that when I came to America, I didn't know how to speak English. The only way I can afford my living expenses is by working in a factory sewing on clothes that my aunt took me to. Most of the time when I'm in America, I depend on my friends because when I receive mails, I don't know how to read it. That's why I want my own children growing up to have a successful life and so I don't have to depend on others. She also said that when you was a little kid, I didn't know how to respond to teachers when there's a report card conference because I don't understand anything that they are saying to me. She also said that there's not much I can do when you are in trouble because I barely communicate right in English.
Mommy, they see all broken English on the media. The same mess, ah. The Hosini, the Yellow Day is yellow, Peter's and all would do a dog, Uncle Jen can. So, Mommy, they all do can again, the oil, tutor home, for Mommy. Mommy, phone, Mommy, cousin, still sorry to you, even cousin got young one now. Judy Mommy got me a more in room, and so quick. Can it eat to you, it met Mommy.Mommy got a pet to him, he met mommy, put down, chew to a mommy's own eye, not to your eye. Mommy, boy, mommy, jiggle, gong, bong, met, do what cousin, jerk how easy, jim the chan, no shoe, bongy, pagwa, pagwani, jo, ugu, to go. He can't your mommy more in room, so he killed one. In a gong, I want mommy, ya may can. Mommy, that can be the gang, ya kissoon in room. Judy, mommy more in room, so he killed one. Judy, one more in room, so he's in one law. So he.Kami waktu kecil, nasi mami nampak ni apa yang orang yang si suy juga terpaksa di mereka sendiri.
What I also found interesting was when she says that people take advantage of her because she speaks broken English. She told me a story. I had to collect rent from my cousin since she's so far, and this person refused to pay rent. One day, I went up to her saying, "You need to move because you haven't paid rent in a couple months." I don't know what this person said to me.Because I barely understand English. I only understand a little bit. But in her tone of voice, she was yelling at me. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't do anything because I have nothing to say, but I didn't know how to say it back.
Hello?
Auntie Annie?
Yes. I came to the States when I was 14. So, number one, definitely not able to understand the.And the classmate when they spoke. A lot of times I did study English when I was in Hong Kong. However, it was very different because I didn't practice dialogue at all, so it's all through books. So when I first came to America, I had very difficult in understanding the textbook. And I remember my first assignment for like summer reading was novel. That was definitely the challenge. And then, but I overcome that by mainly reading more books and then watch TV and try my best to communicate with other people in English and not to be too conscious about I didn't pronounce it right or maybe the grammar is not correct. So basically language was the challenge. I wouldn't call myself successful. I would say I'm working towards being successful, and of course success has many different definitions by others. But as for myself, I am happy of what I'm doing right now. Currently, I'm a professional makeup artist. It's very different from what my parents expect of me. To them, being successful has to be a professional, maybe a lawyer, doctor. To them, that's what's successful. But for me, my definition of success is do what you love. And I'm very passionate about makeup artistry. And I think to be where I am right now, I think one has to know exactly what you want in life and be very self-disciplined and also have to set goals in life. I think I feel a lot of people, they just, let's say I have a lot of friends, they went to college, but they went to college because they feel like they need to go to college, but not necessarily knowing why they want to go to college. They feel like it's something that they have to do, but they don't know why they do it. So I think one of the most important things to be successful in life is definitely find out what you love, what you're passionate about, and follow your dreams and goals. They are not very thrilled, of course, but in the beginning, I was afraid of making them not happy because I pursue what I want. But then I think about it, it's my life and I'm responsible for it. So I will sit them down and explain to them, this is what I do and this is what I'm good at. Because success is not defined by how much you make. Some people may want to do that, but for my own personal definition, success is like what I said before, do what you love. So I think they will slowly come to understanding. I don't expect them to understand overnight, but I feel like if I'm persistent enough in believing what I do, someday they will be proud of me. Well, back then, if you ask any of my high school classmates, they would mostly remember me as a very shy introvert and just very not outgoing person. Anyone ask me to do something, I will always say yes. I would never say no because I will always try to please someone. I was trying to be liked by people because I feel like I didn't speak perfect English. I was definitely very hardworking because I felt like the only way to compensate my not perfect English was to excel in school. I would say that was the past, but now I have become a very confident person. I actually met some of my high school classmates and they think that I changed totally. It's not like candy before. I mean, I know exactly what I want. I speak my mind and confident, and I know exactly what I want. I think what separates me from the me at this moment compared to like 10 years ago when I was in college is I know I want and I'm not afraid to pursue what I want. I believe in myself. Well, I'm sure as we grow up, we make some stupid choices. Like you look back and say, why did I do that? But mostly I'm very happy with my choice, especially my career choice. A lot of times people look for guarantee, but you don't know the outcome unless you do it. And I'm very happy with the choices I made. I don't regret it. And I have my plan for the next 5 years, so we'll see. Well, you know how sometimes, like, what's the term called? Like, people pleaser? Like, every yes. time people ask you a favor, you always say yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
I was like that when I was in high school. I didn't know how to say no. I feel like if I say no, people are not going to like me. So sometimes, even though it's not something I want to do, they will ask me, oh, Annie, I don't remember what they asked me. Can you go grab this for me? Can you borrow your pen? Can I do this? Can I do that? Even though I know I'll borrow them the pen, but they will never give it back. But I just have to do it because I felt like, oh, if I say no, like, they're not going to like me. But now, like, if I don't like you, I will tell you. If I don't want to do something, I'll definitely let you know.
The second interview is hosted by Kiris Meyer with the topic of crossing the boundary of learning with a disability.
Today we'll be interviewing Jesse Weinberg. our topic is learning disabilities fitting in school or in society. Jesse here was diagnosed with autism and Asperger's syndrome at the age of 8, and we are going to ask him questions related to the topic of about fitting in society and school in general. Here's Jesse Weinberg now. What did you feel about... Did you try fitting in when you were in elementary school?
Yeah. Yeah, I tried fitting in when I was in elementary school.
Like, how were you trying to fit in?
Well, I kind of felt like when I was a lot younger, I could have made better friends and stuff. I just tried to be who I was.
Have good friends in elementary school?
I had one good friend that I'd known for about a couple years.
Okay. Alright. You know, what's his name?
His name was Brandon Smith.
Okay. Is he still a really good friend of yours?
Oh. I haven't really seen him in a while, but I try to communicate with him as much as I can. It just feels like as we grew up, things seem to be a lot different than what they were.
Okay. When you were first diagnosed with it and you learned about it, did you change your perspective on yourself?
Well, until I was, like, diagnosed with it, I didn't really realize that's what I had, and I didn't think about it until as I got a little bit older.
Like, you thought about it. Like, how did you think about it when you were older?
It kind of became a lot harder for me trying to figure out, like, who would accept me for who I am, and thinking if I would ever find good friends that accept knowing that.
Okay. So, like you're saying, you have a fear that people might not accept you for who you are. But is that one of the things that's hard to make friends sometimes?
Yes. Maybe? Yeah, it is very challenging making friends. Trying to know who I can actually be with having this disability, it does make it a lot harder.
Okay, and has this affect you in, like, school-wise or anything like that?
It kind of did affect me a little bit, like, trying to find group projects, but other than that, I still feel like I can still do work. It takes me a lot longer to do the work, but that's okay with me, I guess.
What about in society?
I just still try to be me, try to make new friends as best as I can, and just, if they don't like me for me, then,
Okay. What about later in your life, like in middle school, did it change you anyways? Did, like, anything happen?
Not that I can really remember, but it still goes back to trying to make friends and keeping steady friendships with people.
Okay. And what about when you hit high school? Did it really start affecting you then, or not really?
Well, it did have kind of a major impact on me a little bit, because, like I said, I still try to continue to be me, you know, looking for the right people to hang out with, trying to handle coursework, you know. It did get a little challenging with trying to, like, turn in work on time, and people started to kind of question why I started to get extra time, or, like, why I was turning in late, things late, and doing different things with work ethics.
Okay. Okay. And also I want to follow up on the high school thing. Was it trouble making friends in high school too?
Yeah.
Did high school really affect you? Did your disability any affect you even more in high school than you think in previous levels of school?
Well, I think where it kind of got worse was maybe transitioning into the high school itself. It just got really different, you know. Not knowing what to expect after I was diagnosed. And I didn't even, like, realize that I had anything like that.
Okay. Now about, I'm going to talk about, like, schoolwork. Is it hard to do schoolwork sometimes with, disabilities sometimes, do you think?
Well, everybody has their strengths and weaknesses. Like, sometimes it can be hard in math, or, like, trying to turn in things on time, or with the reading comprehension skills.
All right. And the school you went to was a computer-based technology one.
Yes.
Did the computer help you a little more than it did in the past?
Yeah, I never really experienced anything like that. It's a very, very unique experience being at a computer-based school. It does make things a lot easier than going by pencil and paper and everything.
So you're saying is the computers are much more useful than pen, usually.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Like, I know you have... Does your family accept you for who you are?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Okay.
Well, they just want me to do the best that I can do.
All right, now
just be happy for myself and...
All right, now I'm going to move beyond high school. I know... What about, like, trying to talk to people for jobs? Is that kind of hard?
It can be from time to time, because, like, the only thing is, you know, a lot of it's going into places in that they don't really like getting back to you with things when they're supposed to. Just the waiting around can be, like, really difficult.
Okay. Okay. Let's see. What about have you been having good about what about colleges? Are you trying really hard to get into college, and is it hard to is it hard to get in with your disability, you think?
I would say so, because I'm not really used to taking tests, you know, and some colleges requires, you know, testings, and that having trouble with the comprehension was one of the most difficult parts for me.
Okay. Okay, so what about colleges? Do you think you're handling the work well or not?
Well, I think if given the chance, I probably could with more help and maybe trying to push through, even though with having this disability.
Okay. But overall, do you think you'll be able to succeed in life knowing that you have this?
Yeah, of course I can, just as long as you continue... As long as I can continue being who I am and, you know, just trying as hard as possible, I think that would be the key to being successful and trying to be happy with things.
Okay.
Even though things aren't really going right.
Okay. Well, thank you for this interview.
You're welcome.
The third interview is hosted by Stephen White with the topic of crossing the boundary of sexism.
I interview my next-door neighbor, Marie. She has a lot of stories to tell from when she was younger. She was a nurse and went to Villanova to achieve that goal. On her journey to becoming a nurse, she was faced with many obstacles in her path, such as financial problems and sexism. These obstacles would never discourage her, and she became a successful nurse. The first question I asked her was, did you always want to become a nurse?
Not really. I liked helping people, and I liked being with the public. But I really wanted to be either an engineer or an architect in 1954. And in 1954, a woman could always only be a secretary, a nurse, or a teacher. There were no other options that you were supported in or you could get into the schools. And so, since I liked helping people, I decided on nursing, to go to nursing school. And it was like a psychology test. But one of the things it evaluated was, if you started something, would you finish it?
Yeah.
And I was one of the people that had said very clearly that whatever I started, I would finish. So, and the other thing is that I don't, personality-wise, I don't start something unless I know I can finish. And that was the way I was all through school. Yeah.
Well, you enjoyed your job, right?
I loved it.
When she told me that she was never worried that she wouldn't fulfill her dream, I was shocked. She was a woman in the 1950s and wasn't financially stable, but she still had no doubt in her mind that she would make it and would never quit no matter how tough the role became.
Well, my father had mental disease, and so he sometimes worked and sometimes didn't. And the salary for a man in the 50s was $3,000. There was no money that my parents could give me to pay for school. So at 16, I got a job in a restaurant. And very fortunately, the two managers, at the end of the year, they said, Marie, we're going to help you go to college. Any day that you're in college, or that you don't have school, you can come to work here. From the time I was 16 till I was 18 and graduated from high school, every penny I made and my two sisters went to my mother to support the family. Mm-hmm. So here I am, it's June 1954. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, in the spring I went to two nursing schools. And when I interviewed with them, they wanted a down payment of $1,000. Well, I didn't have $1,000. That was tuition for the first year. And they wanted it by June. My aunt was going to Villanova, and she said, oh, Villanova has a program. Apply there. So I applied. And when I interviewed, they said I would have every weekend off. So I could work every weekend.
And it'll help you pay off, right?
And that would help me pay it off. So I would work, I would try to work one or two nights a week from 7 at night to 3 in the morning. And then I would sleep 3 to 6. And we had class from 8 to 5. So I would either take a 3-hour bus ride, or I would be lucky enough that some of the guys from the neighborhood were going to Villanova as well. And if they had an early class, they would always give me a ride.
Well, as you can see, Marie didn't live an easy life. She worked from 16 to 18 in a restaurant. When she was earning the money for her tuition, she worked from 7 at night to 3 in the morning and still went to every class. This is when I realized that when she said nothing was going to stop her, she meant it. At the time she went to Villanova, it just turned into a co-ed school. The men who were already there didn't want the women at their school at all. They went to great lengths to try and stop the women from learning, and Marie gave some examples of sexism that existed on campus.
All of the male students hated us. And they had a committee to keep women off campus.
They were serious about it?
Oh, absolutely. And in the day school, there were 60 nurses. That was registered nurses that were going back for their degree, and my class, which started out with 27 students.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the things they did is they would hold hands and block the entrance to, like, we called it the pie shop. It was the place where you went to get coffee and lunch and things like that. So you could not, the nurses could not go in there.
That was only for women?
No, it was for all the students.
Oh.
But the guys made sure that we were not permitted to get in. But what they didn't realize is we had one lounge in the middle of campus.
Yeah.
And it was called Austin Hall. And we would go in there. And what would happen is several priests would come in. And they would say, okay, girls, give me your order. Give me some money. And I'll go get you coffee or lunch or whatever.
That sounds great.
It was great. It was great. Now, some of the things the guys did to us, there was a dormitory above this Austin Hall.
Yeah.
And they would drop water balloons on us. So frequently, it would be a bright sunny day, and we would come out of Austin Hall with an umbrella up so we wouldn't get hit with the water balloons.
They really hated you.
Oh, yes, they did. Yes. There was actually an official committee to keep women off campus. No dormitories for the women. There were 8 students from out of town, and they lived in a convent in Bryn Mawr. They were not permitted to live on campus. We had to wear a suit every day. You could not wear a see-through blouse. You were not permitted to wear slacks or shorts. The rules were very rigid, and what they did is they put the nursing students in with the engineers and doctors, pre-med students.
Yeah.
And they were fiercely competitive guys. So it was really tough in class because they were determined that they were only going to get A's.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, one of the teams of guys, we had chemistry, and we were given an envelope with elements in it. And I had 2 guys as my partners, and I had to get up and go to the bathroom, and I did. And when I came back, I realized that, you know, the results I was getting were not what I got before I went to the bathroom. And I was like crazy trying to identify these elements. And finally the teacher came over and he just said to me, Marie, you will never know what's in that envelope because your 2 partners mixed your envelope's contents with 10 guys' elements.
They tried to like sabotage your
They work. Sabotaged me, yeah. And they, see, they what they weren't aware of was that the teacher was watching them.
After all the struggles that she faced, she did fulfill her dream and eventually became a nurse and then a chief nurse executive. She was successful, but as you can see, it didn't come easy.
The 4th interview is hosted by Amy Farrell with the topic of crossing the boundary of long-distance relationships.
Last year, I met this kid over a website.
Oh.
Yeah. He was from Canada. Well, first off, I'll say his website came up, and I went on it, and I was like, oh my god. And I, like, went on, and I got to pick, like, I got to say, like, where I was from, like, everything. And then I, met this kid, and he was from Canada. He's from Toronto. And we started talking, and, like, where I was talking about, like, the show Degrassi, because, like, it was filmed there, and, like, we were just talking about, like, stupid stuff, and then, I was like, oh my god, like, add me on Facebook, and so he wound up adding me on Facebook, and it went from there. We started talking for a while, but I had a boyfriend at the time, so we were just friends. We became, like, best friends. And then we started to form a lot of feelings, and by a lot, I mean, like, we said we loved each other, and it was pretty weird. And then he didn't really ask me out. We kind of just assumed that we went out. Considering that, like, he lived in Canada, I guess, I don't know, it was just a weird situation. So we went out, and we were boyfriend and girlfriend, and it was pretty swag. Our relationship got very intense. Like, I chose, like, not to see other people, and, like, we were very into each other and everything. And so my friend Alexa was, like, is all into traveling. So her mom got us, like, passports, and I actually did get to meet him. We wound up going to Canada last summer, and it was, like, the best experience ever, and I can't even describe the moment I saw him. It was everything I ever dreamed of, but us seeing each other and just running towards each other in the airport, even. It was really awesome, though, and we hung out for, like, a week. I was there for a week, and, you know, I actually lied to my mom about it. First of all, my mom didn't know about this, like, the whole time it was happening. My mom had no idea, but it was the best day of my life.
So, do you still go out?
You know what? We don't. Because it was, when I was there, it was all great and good, and it was, you know, we were in love, it was just awesome. Until I left, back to Philadelphia, him staying in Toronto. You know, you just, honestly, you can't have a good long-distance relationship. It just won't work. You just can't do it. It's just, when you're far away from that for that long, it just never works out. And so we just lost, like, what happened was I lost interest. I started seeing another guy, and we started to really like each other, and yeah, he was amazing. Like, you know, and then about him, he's just like, he would be like, oh, break up with your Canadian boyfriend already. Like, literally, I heard that from everyone. Break up with him, break up with him, break up with him. Because you know what? It's stupid. You're never going to see him again. You're never going to marry this kid. Like, it's just not going to work out. And so I was like, you know what? I started cheating on him. That's the thing. I got told, you know what, Jackie? It's not cheating. Just do it. He lives in Canada. It doesn't matter. What happens in one country stays in that country. So I just did it. I just went for it and just did it. And you know what? It was great because I got strong feelings for this guy, and he was like, oh, I'll break up with him so that we can be together. And I broke up with him. And then the other guy completely broke up with. Long distance relationships has taught me a lot. You know, it might be all great and good in the beginning because you're like, oh my god, this guy is so great. I can talk to him about anything, like, and, like, he's just always going to be there because, like, you don't have to worry about hanging out and, like, him not liking you or, like, it being awkward or, like, any stupid things like that. And, like, we video chatted, we talked on the phone. He gave me restrictions. Like, I couldn't do anything. Anything I wanted to do, nope, can't do it. Why? We don't live near each other. Like, we're not even a real couple. That's another thing. Like, when you go to, like, it's first, like I said, at first it's all good and great, and then they start doing stuff that you're like, what? Like, what? No way. And it just gets annoying. And you, that was another reason why I was like, bye. Done with this long distance relationship. And it has a lot of heartbreak with it, even while you're in the relationship, because you're just like, oh my god, like, why can't I be with him? Why can't he live near me? And you're like, and then you're like,
satellite image.
And then you're like, oh my god, like, I want to move to him. But you're young, so you can't.
So it's just a never-ending trail of heartbreak.
Yeah, exactly. It was just a big weight off my shoulders when we broke up, to be honest. You know, I crossed a boundary, but you know what? I got over one. I went back on the right path. I stepped right back over that boundary, took one step back on the good side of the line, and didn't step back over that line. Because you know what? You should never step over boundaries. Boundaries are boundaries for a reason. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Yeah.
They're telling you, listen, this is the line. This is it. This is where you just gotta be like, no farther. Nuh-uh. And I went over that line. And I went against parents. I went against friends. I went against other guys. I went against myself. You know that? Myself. And it could have been all good and great in the beginning, but to be honest, it wasn't. It's just not something to get into, and I'm glad I got rid of it. I said, listen, not gonna work, no, and I took a step back over that line again into the safe ground, and I'm happy. I've moved on, I've learned from it, gained advice from it, and now I know what to do in the near future.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Please stay tuned for more.